From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on May 17th, 2015, when dancers in the Rochester City Ballet performed Peter and the Wolf. But it wasn't the kind of performance you might be used to. The house lights were on. Kids walked around the aisles. Characters in the ballet were introduced to the audience beforehand. This special, sensory-friendly performance was the first of its kind in Rochester. Its goal was to make theater accessible to children with autism and other sensory sensitivities. Now, kids and their families could relax, enjoy the show in an environment that met their needs, without having to worry about other audience members saying, shh. Now, the ballet's overwhelming success has paved the way for a new sensory-friendly performance. This time, The Ugly Duckling will be on stage February 6th at the Nazareth College Arts Center. And we've got a great panel today to talk about The Ugly Duckling and to talk about the importance of inclusive art and making sure that we are thinking about kids with autism, kids with different needs, and making life in general just more accessible in a lot of different ways. Let me welcome our panel. The choreographer for The Ugly Duckling is Jimmy Orante. And Jimmy, it's nice to have you. How are you?
Thank you. Great. Nice to be here.
Nicole Ganchar is the executive director of the Rochester City Ballet. Nice to see you, Nicole.
Great to be here.
And Laura Silverman is here. Dr. Laura Silverman is an assistant professor of neurodevelopmental and behavioral pediatrics with UR Medicine. Dr. Silverman, nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And mom and daughter are here. Natalie Tryon is here. She's a teenager, 17 years old, and Natalie has autism. It's nice to have you here, Natalie. How are you?
I'm good.
And Chris Tryon's here. That's Natalie's mom and also a child life specialist with Golisano Children's Hospital at UR Medicine. Chris, nice to have you as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What does this whole idea mean to your family, Chris?
It's fantastic. Natalie has had a journey with sensory sensitivities and autism for a large portion of her life. And in the early days, it was challenging to go out to places because she was super, super sensitive. Any place that was loud or dark or just quite chaotic she had a really difficult time tolerating that. And that limited what we could do as a family. She has an older sister and they're very close in age. So we tried to normalize things as much as possible. But It did impact us as a family and the things that we could do together
consequently,
that other people did.
Yeah, consequently, you stay home more often than
mm-hmm.
not, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was challenging, but as she grew and learned some coping strategies and abilities to tolerate different sensations, things opened up a little bit, but still not like others. So.
And Natalie, 17 years old now, and Ugly Duckling, I think, is aimed 3 to 10. Is that right, Jimmy, Nicole? So.
Yes, yes.
All right, so we'll talk more about The Ugly Duckling in a second. You're 17, but you can certainly talk to us about the value of trying to make sure this appeals and welcomes people. Well, first of all, what's your thoughts about a theater, a ballet, saying, we're going to reach out to people, we're going to make it comfortable, safe, et cetera?
I think it's great because I know when I was younger, there were probably plenty of plays or movies I would have wanted to see, but I couldn't just because I couldn't sit in a dark theater for however long it would take to actually like fully watch the performance. And I know in recent years, we've gone to a lot of my high school performances, but I haven't been able to fully enjoy the performances because it's so dark in there, and after a while, I just get so overwhelmed by sensory input that I just can't focus.
And so now, you think about the kids who will be going in February to see the City Ballet, to have this chance. Light's going to be on, different sort of a setting. That's, do you think that will help other kids who, were like you?
Oh, yeah. It'll, because for me, at least, when the lights are on, I feel like more comfortable because I can see everything. I don't have to worry about anything surprising me. And also, that the fact that the kids can move around is great because you get really fidgety after a while just because you don't have a lot of physical stimulation, like start tapping toes or something, and that distracts everyone else.
And Chris, so now you think about those other families who have wondered, just like your family did for a while, what's out there, what is accessible? What do you think it means to the community of families like them?
Right. I think it's going to help them to reintegrate, I think, because we did kind of go insular for a while when we couldn't do those things. and helps to, I guess, be more a part of your community again and to feel more normalcy in your life.
Well, I want to bring in Dr. Laura Silverman as well, because Dr. Silverman, one of the points you were making before the program even began is this is a great opportunity for families with kids with sensory needs, special needs, autism, but that's just one slice of the community that we can be thinking even more broadly about how families can feel welcome and accessible, yes?
Yes. I think, you know, I work with families in a clinic at the hospital. And one of the things that I hear universally is that when you have a child, you have dreams about what your life is going to be like with that child. And you have ideas about what you're going to be like as a family and the things that you're going to do recreationally. And I think once your child gets a diagnosis, whether it be autism or, you know, even if they just have sensory challenges, which isn't a specific diagnosis, that dream has to change a little bit initially. And I think, you know, what's really important about events like the event that the ballet is having is they're saying to families, actually, you don't necessarily have to change your dreams. We can change the way we do things to make it more accessible for you so that you can be a part of the broader community. And I think one of the things that I often tell families is that it's important for you to take a step back, even if it's really uncomfortable and really hard, to think about how you can do that in a small scale and within your family and get in touch again with what your goals were for yourselves recreationally as a family and think about what baby steps you can take to actually get there, whether it be just to eat in a restaurant or even to walk into a movie theater for the first time. I think those things are really important. They benefit the family and they also benefit the society by having exposure to people who aren't all the same.
Sure. So, but that kind of, it goes two ways here. You've got families who are going to have to think about ways that we can try to find ways to go out, to do things, go out to eat, do activities. But it certainly helps that the ballet is saying, we want to reach out. This is what we want for our community. We want to give them this opportunity. And wouldn't it be, Dr. Silverman, wouldn't it be great if restaurants once a quarter, once a month, once a year said, this is sensory experience night. This is, I don't care what you call it. We're aiming for families with autism, younger children, et cetera. We'll respond to whatever the needs are, whether it's noise or lights or whatever. I don't see a whole lot of that. And I actually think it'd be, I always say good ethical business is profitable business. I think everybody would show up. You know, it's wonderful. Do you think we'll start to see more of that?
I hope so. I mean, I think one of the benefits of a city like Rochester is that there are a lot of specialists here. There are a lot of people who know about autism. There's a lot of knowledge and there's a lot of expertise. So if restaurants or other cultural institutions wanted to do something like that, there are people who they could talk to who could advise them. I think there are also really strong parent groups that could serve on advisory committees and also give feedback. So I do think it's a really nice way to welcome a more diverse group of people into the community and into these recreational activities.
Absolutely. And I want to ask Chris and Natalie if we're going to expand just beyond going to the ballet. You know, what else is out there? But parents and listeners, we'd love to hear from you as well. How could our community be more adaptable to your family's needs? And what is out there that you've seen that, you know, might be worth highlighting as well? You can call the program 844-295-TALK, toll free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Chris, going out to dinner, challenging at all based on, and Natalie, same question, you know, is you talked about going to a movie theater. That's different. It's dark. There's flashes of light. Sensorily, it may be more of a challenge. But what about other settings, going out to dinner, other things?
I don't remember much trouble going out to eat when I was little.
Chris, you're smiling. You want to jump in here?
My memory is not that reliable.
Okay. Which is maybe good because, yes, there were some places we tried to go to. That were, you know, dark inside.
Sure.
And loud, just by nature of the theming and such. And I remember one event in particular, my parents were with us. They lived out of town, but we were all excited to go to this kind of landmark place in Rochester. And we got there, and it wasn't a good day for Natalie. We got in, we got up to the door, and then she was like 4 or 5, and she just put her hands on her ears and just started going, no, 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 and big to-do. And at that point, my parents weren't they were trying to understand what we were dealing with, mm-hmm. but not fully, and they were a little frustrated. And I just said, we have to find a different place. We have to go, because we'd tried to push her in other places, and that never works out very well for her and for the rest of us in particular. So we learned early that, you know, when she gives us those cues, we have to change our plan.
Sure.
So I think more avenues and opportunities for sensory-friendly events, going to restaurants, to the arts, movie theaters, sports. I don't know how you could do sports events necessarily, but you never know.
Sure.
Would give families with kids with special needs, sensory needs, a feeling of acceptance again, I think, too. Earlier I'd said, you know, to be a part of the community, but it's also an acceptance. Because I think once you get that diagnosis and you realize you're going to have to redefine what, you know, is successful, what your dreams are and things, I think society's moved really quickly in growing to that acceptance of folks with different abilities. But you kind of, again, pull away and you feel at times that you're not accepted in certain places. And that's really hard.
Natalie, when it comes to going out again, you've talked about light. You've talked about getting fidgety, wanting to kind of get up, move around a little bit. What could a restaurant do to make you feel more comfortable?
Well, they could probably have sections with different lightings, depending on what your comfort level is.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even need to be just for kids with autism. Like, I guess people with eye problems would appreciate that,
or
too.
Or light sensitivity. Yeah. Someone like me who deals with migraines very often, I get very light sensitive. I do, absolutely. Yeah. That's an idea. Would you like to get up and walk around sometimes, stretch your legs during a meal?
Yeah, if we take too long leaving somewhere, I start to pace. Mom can attest to that.
Now mom and daughter agree on something.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what do you think restaurants could do? You agree with those things?
I think turning the music down.
Turn the music down?
Sometimes, some places we go, I'm like, I'm overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm sure others are as well. You know, beyond that, there's a balance as well. You know, there are places that are just by nature of the environment are a little more busy and chaotic. So, you know, you split the difference of, you know, deciding that. But if those places want to bring it down a couple of notches so that you can try some new food or new environments and new experiences, I think that would be great.
Well, it's a credit to the Rochester City Ballet that we're talking about this today, because Nicole Ganchar is the executive director of the ballet. I'm going to send the microphone over to you. Why don't you tell us, remind our audience again exactly what we're previewing today, and let's talk about how you've put it together. It's The Ugly Duckling coming up when?
It's The Ugly Duckling coming up February 6th. There's public performances for anyone the 6th and the 7th at 2, but the sensory-friendly performances at 11. And you talked about how people become uncomfortable sitting for a long time. So one of the things that we do is hand out free fidget balls to all the children in attendance. And I got a great note from a mom last year saying that usually when they go and they do anything, her son just bites his fingers. And because he had the fidget ball, he just played with the fidget ball the entire time. And so that was really great. And then you also talked earlier about, you know, sometimes it's a success just walking in the theater. And that's why we feel it's really important to have all the tickets for free. The Glover Crass Charitable Trust and a couple other groups in town have donated money so that we can do that. So that way, if a parent doesn't know how the child's going to wake up that day, and they wouldn't have spent the money for no reason. So that way they can just take the risk. We had one little boy last year who made it out of the car, made it into the theater, and then had to go home. But his mom looked at me and said, "We'll be back next year. We're really thrilled he got out of the car." So everybody defines their success in their own way.
I think that's well said. So the atmosphere at 11 a.m. on the 6th, paint more of a picture for us.
Well, people can come early. Okay. They'll see a ballet demonstration. There's coloring. We also, on your podcast page, there's a study guide, so any family that wants to come can download the study guide ahead of time. They can see a map of the theater, see where the restrooms are, where the seating is. There's questions, Laura, that's called a social story?
Yep, social story.
A social story, so that they can tell their child will be handed a ticket. We'll have to sit in a specific seat, but it's okay, you can get up and walk around. We also have a quiet room. Last year, Child First Network and Mary Cariola helped us set it up, and there were a number of children that used it. Children who were upset could play with sand. They got heavy bean bags to hold. Anyone who becomes agitated or distracted during the performance can go to the quiet room and then come back, which is great. And we also, before the performance starts, will have introduce all the characters, tell them when things might get scary. And Dr. Silverman's going to come and watch one of our run-throughs and let us know if we should perhaps adjust the lighting somewhere. There's a section with thunder, so we're going to address how to best handle that during the sensory-friendly performance.
Okay. And what else will you be looking for, Dr. Silverman?
I think in general, I'll just be thinking about the performance from the point of view of how people process information and what sensory experiences people with autism might have, and thinking about ways to adjust the environment so there'll be fewer triggers. And I think, you know, my perspective is that there are people with autism and other sensory-based sensitivities have, they're not just being brats or being difficult. There's a lot of research that's emerging finally that looks at the neurobiological basis of some of these sensory differences and how the brains of people who have these experiences of being kind of sensitive to their environment, how their brains actually work a little bit differently. So, you know, what we're trying to do and what the ballet is trying to do here is to alter the environment so that there are fewer triggers, so that they can enjoy the performance without experiencing some of those sensory experiences that might be really difficult for them.
We were really lucky last year to hook up with Golisano Children's Hospital and also Autism Up, and everyone told us another activity before the show starts, we have face painting, and everyone told us no one will want their face painted in the autism community. And not many children did do it. But then after the show, we have an autograph party, and a number of children came up. We had to set the face painting back up because now that the children had seen the show, they wanted their face painted like a duck or another character.
Well, let me ask Chris Tryon, again, as a parent and a child life specialist with Golisano Children's Hospital at UR Medicine. You know, Laura was just talking about how, you know, there are neurological reasons for certain behaviors and reactions to things. Mm-hmm. And you've already spoken about, as a parent, even having to explain to other relatives when there might be a moment that Natalie was shutting down or struggling with something. Mm-hmm. I imagine, as a parent, it's an adaptive process, learning your child, trying to understand. I mean, that's true for every parent, right?
Right.
Not just parents with kids who have
just one
autism.
The back, right?
Yes, yes. But then having to try to work with the various parts of your own community, relatives, mm-hmm. friends, people at school, teachers, et cetera, mm-hmm. trying to understand your child's behavior. And that's mm-hmm. I imagine that can be difficult.
It was. We were fortunate to have a lot of people that were open to mm-hmm. learning in our lives and that were quite supportive. But we still have run into some teachers and other healthcare providers that Natalie's encountered that we just had to nudge along a little bit more. I think both professionally and personally, a lot of it's intertwined. I believe there's always a reason for a behavior. And you just need to find that out. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. But it was certainly hard because in the beginning when she was very overloaded, the way she expressed she was overloaded looked like a tantrum, looked like, you know, I want my way, I want this or that. And that's what it was, what it looked like to outsiders who didn't know us. And family, and it was tough to help them understand that it's more overloading, and I had to come up with a lot of analogies, and that seemed to be a way to help them.
Yeah, Dr. Silverman?
Yeah, I sort of wanted to piggyback on what Chris is saying. And I think a challenge for a lot of people who have kids with autism is that in some ways it's an invisible disability. So people who have autism don't have any real physical features necessarily that are noticeable to other people. Mm-hmm. So if you have Down syndrome, the public may be aware that you have Down syndrome and may have certain expectations for your behavior. But if you have autism, you may just look like every other kid. So if your behaviors are different from what those expectations are, people can be, you know, sometimes rude, sometimes not accommodating at all. And I think in terms of working with, you know, relatives, other family members, people in the public, that can sometimes be a challenge. And I think similarly, there's no right now known neurobiological basis specifically for autism. So you can't take a blood test like you could if you're diagnosing diabetes. And I think sometimes that also makes it hard. You know, people wonder, oh, does she really have this or is she just being difficult in this situation?
Sure. And, you know, Natalie, you're nodding to a lot of that. You know, had I met you, you know, without any background on you, I think I would not have thought you have autism. You know, so that's just an observation. So can you elaborate a little bit more on what we just heard?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to have a lot of support and very understanding parents. But I know that some kids don't have that, so it's a little more difficult for them to interact with neurotypical or, well, yeah, neurotypical people. And especially if they don't understand what's going on with the kid. So I just my brain just blanked.
I think you made a perfect point there.
Sorry.
To begin with, I
woke up very early this morning. I'm a high school student.
You don't have to make any excuse at all. I think you just made a wonderful point. And let me follow that up, Chris, to Natalie's mom. If you could put your child life specialist hat on,
yeah.
You know, some people might see a child with autism have some sort. You use the word tantrum or some sort of an outburst because of an overload, a sensory overload, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people say, well, just be firm. Don't tolerate that behavior, right? And the mm-hmm. interesting thing about research that I've been seeing in recent years, apart from children with autism, just in general parenting, the notion of a super hardline, strict, no tolerance is not always effective and sometimes detrimental even for neurotypical children, yes?
That's what I believe, correct. Again, I think there's always a reason for a behavior, and you have to find out what that is. And sometimes it is challenging, especially if you're in the middle of the grocery store, and maybe you were out running around, you've just been at the playground, and we got to go get milk, let's do it. Neurotypical kid on the spectrum, any kind of kid, they're tired, they're hungry. You're dragging them one more place. You're pushing them beyond. We as adults have kind of those coping mechanisms, and we can probably last a little bit longer because we know maybe what's coming next, and or can grab maybe a swig of water in the car before we go back into the store. And these kids aren't there cognitively yet, and we need to be monitoring those types of things for them.
And for the people who say, "Well, you're coddling," what do you say to that?
You're helping them understand what they need, and that old adage, an ounce of prevention, just kind of thinking through things a little bit more, I think can help prevent some of these meltdowns and things. It's not going to eliminate it. We're all human. We all have good days and bad days.
Sure.
Try to be cognizant of it, but it always seems to bode better when you can try to stay calm when kids are having a difficult time and try to explore what's going on.
Well, if you're just joining us, they'll have, a much easier time really enjoying themselves, kids with autism or different sensory experiences and needs, at the performance of The Ugly Duckling. It's coming up, the Rochester City Ballet presenting that, a sensory-friendly ballet, and that is February 6th at 11 a.m. at the Nazareth College Arts Center. Nicole, how did it go with Peter and the Wolf last year?
It was so much fun. It really, the dancers and myself, it was our favorite day of the entire season. And it was so rewarding as an artist to be able to share that performance with everybody and have the community really be behind us. we tried to promote it as much as possible on Facebook so people could share the event. And Flower City Downs Network got behind us, CP Rochester, and everyone was saying, what could we do to help? Holy Childhood sent home notes in the kids' backpacks, because it's actually very difficult giving away free tickets. And it was also incredibly nice. We had one young man come in a wheelchair, and he really wasn't interacting with people. And as soon as the lights went to half, he started to vocalize. No one turned around. No one looked at him once. We had another little boy walk up and down the aisle the entire time, and we had a physical therapist who was an usher at one end and a special ed teacher at the other end, and his family came. His mother had written me an email and said, our daughter came home to help care for her brother. Can she come for free too? Well, that's the whole point. Who's ever a caregiver, if it's grandma, an aunt, an uncle, we want everybody to come, the neurotypical siblings, and enjoy the performance together.
Well, let me ask the choreographer then. Jimmy Arante is the choreographer for The Ugly Duckling coming up. Anything change for you in the sensory-friendly show versus, you know, the otherwise neurotypical shows?
No, I don't think so. You know, I made the story so that I think it's pretty fun. And I think it's available there, and it's for everyone to come and see. I think they'll enjoy it.
And Natalie looked it up for us. 1843, Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes.
is that right, Natalie? Okay, so 1843, the story goes all the way back to 1843. Tell us the story of the Ugly Duckling. Let me ask. That's part of the story.
A brief, yeah. You know, and reading the story, it's pretty heavy on the poor Ugly Duckling. You know, everywhere she goes, she just finds, she thinks she finds refuge, but she runs into a lot of negativity. And she doesn't understand why. I say she because in my production it's a girl. Normally it's a boy, but she doesn't understand why. You know, but it's not her fault. She was born with ducks, and she's a swan, so she has siblings who are ducks, little ducks, and she looks different. She sounds different, and therefore she's treated differently. She doesn't understand why, and everywhere she goes, she's neglected. And it's kind of sad for her. But, you know, what my job is, how do I turn it around and how do I make it a fun story? And don't worry, for all you listeners, it is a very happy ending. Yeah. it's only 50 minutes, but in that 50 minutes, we understand why, finally at the end, you know, why she was treated that way. Because she's a beautiful swan and people don't understand that from the very beginning. So we all watch her transform. We all watch her fly away with a flock of swans. So it's a happy ending.
It's a great message. And how are you choreographing different elements? You know, what are you aiming for the audience to take from your choreography?
You know, as performers, we have the ability to touch many people's lives when we're on stage. And who knows, you know, who knows what sparks a person's interest when we're up there. But I want them to come away with a sense that I told the story well. You know, I think when as choreographers or dancers when we're on stage, it shouldn't be a game of charades with the audience. So the audience shouldn't try to guess what we're trying to do. They should be able to understand what we're doing. So I have to have a clear thought, you know, and how I transform that, you know. And a lot of it came across with the dancers. The dancers are great at the ballet. I was really surprised at their input and their willingness to kind of invest in their characters and go all the way out. So it wasn't only me creating all the steps. The dancers came also, you know, they filled the cup as well. It wasn't just me giving everything. So it was great. And a lot of it ended up being, has a nice comedic sense, the whole ballet. So it's not just, you know, full grief. There's a lot of funny parts that could have been that gone that way, but I turned it the other way around.
50 minutes, no intermission, right?
50 minutes, no intermission, yes.
Is that true for the sensory friendly performance and also the others?
Yes, for all of them. We're still deciding on the sensory-friendly one of what we might have to delete or take out, but I'm sure we'll figure that out soon.
And Laura, is that a pretty good time frame, you know, in your experience? Does that work pretty well, especially when we're doing it in a sensory-friendly manner?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer, I think, because there's so much variability in the people who attend. So I think, you know, my answer to your question is more, it sounds like it's a 50-minute performance with a lot of leeway to make it as long as you need it to be. And I think that's what's perfect.
Yeah, I guess some families may say, hey, we were there for the first half hour, you know, and just decided it was enough. Mm-hmm. It's okay, I suppose, right? Even though you want to see the end of the show. But I mean, every family is different. Every need is different. Yeah. Is that part of what?
Yeah.
What you're
and
saying?
I think it's also a really nice goal. So having a 50-minute performance gives families a goal. Okay, we're going to get through almost an hour of something in the community. And there's flexibility to leave. There's flexibility to move. There's flexibility to make noise. But we're going to aim for this. And I think that's one great benefit of a 50-minute performance, that I don't think that that is a length that a lot of families would set for themselves initially, because it may seem too long. And I think a lot of people can actually do it.
Chris, what about your family? Short, long, 50 minutes?
Short, with the opportunity to escape for us.
Sure.
As she's grown, obviously, things have improved. But in those early days, yep, short and sweet.
Natalie, what would you think? 50 minutes.
Well, for me, I think it's a good length. I can sit through a 45-minute high school class. I can probably sit through a 50-minute play.
You don't get fidgety in a 45-minute high school class?
I have my pencil.
Let's get a short break, and we're going to come back and learn more about what's coming up here through Rochester City Ballet. It's the Ugly Duckling, and we're going to be talking about accessibility programs, really just making sure everyone feels that they have a chance, their family, their children. This performance of the Ugly Duckling by Hans Christian Andersen is choreographed by Jimmy Arante, and it is aimed for children with special sensory needs, kids with autism, really ages 3 through 10. It's February 6th at 11 a.m. at the Nazareth College Art Center. Nicole, how can people get tickets or at least make sure that you've got a seat?
For the sensory-friendly performance, they should call the ballet 461-5850 or email info@rochestercityballet.org.
You've got to do the phone number again. We don't ever let anybody do it once.
461-5850.
I'm on a movement. I get these 2-minute long voicemail messages in my office, and then someone leaves a number once. And I've got to listen to the entire 2-minute message again. So,
And then anyone else who wants to attend the public performance, they can purchase tickets at boxoffice.nazareth.edu.
All right. And I want to mention as well that this program is presented as part of our Dialogue on Disability Initiative. It's a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Short break. More connections next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections First Hour, have you seen the film The Big Short? Nominated for Best Picture in the Oscars, it aims to tell the story of what caused the financial collapse. We'll talk to people who know nothing about finance or economics but saw the movie, and we'll find out if the film has succeeded. Then, second hour, what should Rochester do with the new space created by the Filled Inner Loop? Talk to you Wednesday.
Some gun control advocates believe economics can help achieve their goal.
The only thing they really understand is money.
So would divesting publicly traded gun companies from stock portfolios help the cause?
I don't think it really affects the underlying business. So over time, in a free and open market, other shareholders will come and take their place.
Whether divestiture works as a political weapon, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It's a packed studio as we talk about sensory-friendly ballet, The Ugly Duckling, with the Rochester City Ballet coming up here. You've been hearing from Jimmy Arante, who's the choreographer, and Nicole Ganshar, who is the executive director of the Rochester City Ballet, Dr. Laura Silverman, an assistant professor in neurodevelopmental and behavioral pediatrics at UR Medicine. Chris and Natalie Tryon are here. Natalie's 17. She has autism. She's been talking about her experiences. And Chris is a child life specialist with Golisano Children's Hospital at UR Medicine. And saw a couple of comments just from parents sending emails saying, essentially, thank you for this. Mark says, thanks for this. Wish these kind of programs were around about 20 years ago, but still great to see for kids in our community. And why don't we see more of this? Well, we kind of talked about that, but I'll ask Dr. Laura Silverman. Mark wants to know, why don't we see more of this? What would you say to him?
That's a really good question. I think that these kinds of programs are emerging right now, and there may be multiple reasons why we haven't seen more of it. I think some of it is just that over the past 10 or 15 years, there's been much more of a focus on inclusion. So people are becoming more aware that there can be different experiences and that shows can actually be modified to make them accessible. I also think that there have been some changes in research. So we understand more about how the brains of people who have sensory differences work. We know more that this is actually a valid condition. And there's also more research on evidence-based approaches for modifying the world to make it accessible and a focus on measurable change. So, you know, if you want someone to attend the sensory-friendly ballet, what kinds of things would we want to change in the ballet and is it effective? So really using data to evaluate whether something works or not. I think, you know, those are some changes that have led people in this direction.
And Dr. Silverman, on the question of inclusion, I want to talk just a little bit about your thoughts on sort of a special performance aimed at a particular community or maybe a restaurant setting aside an evening for families with kids with who have different needs. Versus more day-to-day inclusion. And so I go back, I go back a long time now to my camp counselor days. We used to have, at a YMCA camp down in Chautauqua Lake, we used to have Rotary Week at the end of the summer. It was the last week. Mm-hmm. And about halfway through my counseling career, we had talked to the director and everybody kind of talked and said, why are we doing this separately? Can we do this inclusively and throughout the summer? And so we threw out Rotary Week and then it was just, you know, kids with different needs. And I really enjoy that. We had a couple of kids with Down syndrome. The first week of every summer, they would always be there. And I would always see the kids they were in the cabins with at first, maybe didn't really know what to think, haven't spent a lot of time with kids with different needs. Sometimes maybe kids can be cruel for a little bit. Obviously, we don't tolerate that. But then by the end of the week, everybody's rallying. I mean, it's like arms linked. We're all together. And they would never tolerate anybody picking on their new friends, which we thought was great. So we came to the conclusion that, you know, inclusion as much as you can, as opposed to separating out, is a goal. But I think what we're seeing with the City Ballet and talking about these kinds of opportunities are that's a great goal, but not possible in every circumstance, whether it's theater, different performances, restaurants. Fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that full inclusion is always a good ultimate goal to have, but I think not everyone is there yet. And so having a variety of experiences available to people, so experiences where maybe there's a sensory-friendly performance, but there are also some supports in place so that if people with disabilities want to participate in a regular performance, that might be possible. And it may take an institution a while to figure out what those supports would be, and the sensory-friendly performance might be what we need as a society first to kind of get there, and also for families to bring their kids out and into a situation where they may be judged. It you know, that's a scary thing, and, you know, there's also potential financial loss if things don't go well, so having a sensory-friendly possibility like this, it gives parents the opportunity to go out there to try it out and to figure out what they would need to do if they want to be fully included in a regular performance. So I think it's a tool.
Sure. And, you know, a week of summer camp is not a perfect analogy to a performance of City Ballet or a night at a restaurant. So, but, you know, Chris, what do you think?
It's good. I liked what she said. I was looking at it as a stepping stone because all those things that you just talked about, families feeling like they're going to be judged or some loss, financial loss, or, you know, just even the emotional let down of, oh man, we thought we could try this and we really, it didn't work, it failed. You go through, you know, waves of those types of emotions and it's hard. So I think having those opportunities to have that stepping stone, if you will, of having a sensory friendly opportunity to go out and test the waters and start building some of that, those skills that Natalie learned a lot of coping strategies to deal with all these different environments. And we learned how to prepare her before we were going to a new place and things like that. So not just the child can learn to practice their skills, the parents can practice their skills.
Sure.
As well and have built in more successes in their lives too.
And Chris, do you remember when you got the diagnosis, was there a conversation in your family that we'll probably be able, you know, have to modify our expectations on what we can do?
Well, yes. Yeah, just I think my professional background kind of informed that.
Sure.
For me.
Yeah.
in particular, but you know, my husband and my older daughter and in family, yeah, we had to say, well, we do need to think of X, Y, and Z now when we try to plan a family vacation, or again, even just doing things in the community. So it does have an impact.
And as we hopefully see more, I think, events like this, I think everybody agrees that this is a really admirable event for families. And it, maybe we will see more opportunities in parts of our community. But not just speaking from your own experience, Chris, mm-hmm. but just speaking generally about mm-hmm. families who are raising children with different needs, is there a concern that you give it a shot, we're going to go out to a performance, we'll go out to a restaurant, and if it goes poorly, that will almost shut down the parents, not just the child, but the mm-hmm. parents from feeling like, big mistake, can't do that, don't do that again.
It can, because parenting is a challenge, no matter what kid you have. But certainly a kid who you need to be thinking in a different way, doing things in a different way, it's emotionally exhausting and tiring. And I guess if you have these encounters where, oh, we thought we could do it, oh, no, it didn't work. Oh, I thought we could do it, no, it takes a lot of energy away. And it does make you a little more reticent to try something again. You know, I said earlier, you know, initially we just kind of stayed at home because it was easier than trying to get up all the energy needed to go and try something different.
Dr. Silverman, you want to jump in as well?
Yeah. You know, when I talk to parents about setting goals for what they want to do with their families, I always try to get an idea of what their ultimate goal is, but then to help them kind of work backwards. And when they're just starting to go out into the community, to start with a low-stakes situation. So if the goal is ultimately to have a great big family dinner at your favorite restaurant, I would say, how about we go to this one place that serves the food that your child really loves at 2 o'clock when they're not there, when it's really empty, so we can see what it's like in a situation that's quiet and where we know they'll be as successful as possible. And then you kind of move in baby steps closer to where you want to be.
Yeah, what a good idea. Nicole Genshaw, remind us what it was that prompted the Rochester City Ballet to do this with Peter and the Wolf last year, The Ugly Duckling this year. Tell us the story.
Well, I joined the Rochester City Ballet in September of 2014, and I had one of my previous jobs had been in the Pittsburgh Ballet, and they did the first sensory-friendly Nutcracker in the country. So they inspired me to bring the program here. And it came from the National Theater Autism Initiative that's run by the Theater Development Fund that people might know of, that they sell the tickets booth, the discount tickets in New York City. They did a sensory-friendly performance of The Lion King maybe 6 years ago. And then when I was in Pittsburgh, we went and saw a sensory-friendly performance of Spider-Man on Broadway. And it took a lot of work, but then it's great because they and the Kennedy Center have a pretty thick manual of what you can do to make your performance accessible. And the goal is to get people to regular performances, not just sensory-friendly. So it was great last year. We got emails from parents saying, you know, it was a success for us, so we're going to go and see another performance that isn't necessarily a sensory-friendly performance. So we hope we're a gateway. We hope we're inspiring families and also other organizations in the city. But it is a relatively new concept nationally to do this, and I think we're only one of four ballet companies in the country that does this.
And Nutcracker, Spider-Man, Lion King, I mean, those are, I would imagine, a lot of movements, very active, really sensory experiences mm-hmm. that would probably need some modification.
Right. And you want it to be the same performance. You want it to have the same artistic integrity of any performance mm-hmm. that you would do. So people aren't really seeing a different performance than the neurotypical audience sees. The only thing that is different is the lights are left on. We have a quiet room for everyone, which you normally wouldn't have. If there's thunder or lightning, or in the case of Nutcracker, sometimes there's a cannon that comes out.
Yeah.
So that you don't have the scary things or the things that might really jolt someone. And for example, last year when we had masks on the characters, the wolf came out holding her mask. And we said, this is Kelly. She's playing the wolf. And then she put her mask on. Then she took it off again so that everyone could acclimate to what we were trying to do.
Makes a lot of sense there. And so the same kind of thing with Ugly Duckling?
Same kind of thing with Ugly Duckling. All right. And luckily we have friends who help us and let us know when something might need to be modified.
All right. Well, I think we have Lisa Carling on the line. She's the Director of Accessibility Programs with the Theater Development Fund at the National Autism Theater Initiative. And Lisa, it's nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks. I think we're going to get some snowy weather here in New York City, but when I think of all of you in Rochester, I will not complain. So, anyway.
Well, we actually haven't had any snow this winter, oddly. So, you know.
Okay. Well, we had some last night.
We did. Natalie's correcting me on that. It's true. Thank you.
Yeah, almost didn't get to school this morning.
Anyway, I'm thrilled to join you and. From what we gather, Peter and the Wolf was a tremendous success last May, and I hope you've been getting some wonderful feedback on that.
Well, we were just talking to Nicole Ganchar about that and now about The Ugly Duckling, which is coming up in just a few weeks here. So, Lisa, Nicole was just talking about the different sensory-friendly performances that are designed for families with children with autism to feel comfortable. And the way that in recent years we're starting to see more of this. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. I think that TDF, Theater Development Fund, we were the first to do it on Broadway, October 2nd, 2011, with the first ever autism-friendly performance of The Lion King. And because we work so closely with Broadway and our subsequent shows, now for we're going into our sixth year, have been Broadway shows, we got national and international recognition. And that sort of started the ripples, if you will, with our autism-friendly performance of The Lion King. And now as I look around the country, it is wonderful to see so many theaters who are starting their own sensory-friendly programming. And what we all always have stressed with our Autism Theater Initiative is use the resources in your community. You have them there. It's most important of all, it's the wonderful families affected by autism or with other developmental or cognitive disabilities, but it's the schools, it's the organizations that serve these communities where you will find some wonderful, support in terms of advisors for shows, modifications, wonderful volunteers at these performances. So the methodology that we've developed is so replicable and adaptable to all communities. We were really happy to be a part of Rochester Ballet's efforts in this regard.
Well, and Lisa, before I let you go here, you know, I think it's important to point out that over the years we've seen the diagnosis rates for autism change. And even just the other day, I think last week in our dialogue on disability, I think they told me it's in the 40s now, 1 in 45 or 8.
It dropped. I had
heard 66 last year, and I think, but I'm hearing that it had dropped again. The bottom line is, I recall when it was 125, then 100, then 88, then 68. Mm-hmm. So what we know is the diagnosis rate has gone up. We're learning more about it. And so I suspect you have seen no shortage of families embracing these opportunities where they are, yes?
Absolutely. We sell out. Sometimes it's in 4 hours. Sometimes it's in several days. But we are selling tickets to Broadway houses. So we're looking at 1,100 to 2,000 seat houses. We have a mailing list of 7,600 people now in the New York, New Jersey, greater New York area. And those are households. So there is a tremendous need for this type of theater accessibility. It's long overdue. Those of us who've worked in accessibility for theater over the years, pretty much, sign language interpreting, audio description, open captioning, that is all set. But when you look at that vast number of audience members to reach, families affected by autism and other developmental cognitive disabilities, how do you accommodate them? It's an atypical audience that deserves, that very much needs that welcoming, supportive, judgment-free environment. And that's what we're all doing. That's what Nicole so successfully did and what other theaters around the country are doing.
And yes, 1 in 68, CDC, I see, and CNN and others are reporting. But again, that rate has been on the move. So Lisa Curley is the Director of Accessibility Programs for the Theater Development Fund at the National Autism Theater Initiative. Lisa, thanks for taking the time and sharing these success stories with us, and continued good work in the future.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for including me.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes left, so if you're joining us late in the hour here, there's a great performance coming up on February 6th at 11 a.m. at the Nazareth College Art Center. It's The Ugly Duckling by Hans Christian Andersen and Rochester City Ballet, performing three different performances. The 11 a.m. performance on the 6th of February is a sensory-friendly ballet. And Nicole Ganchar, getting tickets, how to do that, and what's the, again, the short description of how it will set up for families with children with these needs. Go ahead.
You can download the study guide from the podcast page for Connections.
Yep, that'll be up this afternoon, yep.
And our phone number is 461-5850.
Do it again.
Please, 461-5850, or email us your address and how many tickets you need at info@RochesterCityBallet.org.
info@RochesterCityBallet.org with information on how many tickets you and your family might need. They'll help you out there. That's coming up. So it's the 11 a.m. show on February 6th. Other performances are when?
2 o'clock in the afternoon.
2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 6th and the 7th?
6th and the 7th, Saturday and Sunday that weekend, and they're being sold by the Nazareth Arts Center box office.
All right, and some final thoughts from our mom on the panel, Chris Tryon, who's not only a mom but a child life specialist. You know, wrap it up for us, what you think this kind of event means to the community, for parents like you, for families like yours.
I think it's very important, and again, to be a part of a community, that's what everybody wants to feel. And families of kids with, you know, sensory needs, autism, disabilities, sometimes we don't feel a part of our grander community. And so having the opportunities to be accepted and welcomed and have things tailored for you is a special feeling. And I think it's great that Rochester is able to do this for us.
Chris and Natalie Tryon, great having you here. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. Really benefited from that this hour. Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Natalie, great meeting you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our thanks also to Dr. Laura Silverman. Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nicole Ganchar from Rochester City Ballet, continued success to you. Thank you. And Jimmy Arante, the choreographer of The Ugly Duckling. Fun talking to you. Good luck with the programs coming up. Thank you so much for your time. Reminder that this program has been presented as part of the Dialogue on Disability Initiative, a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies. In conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series, Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. That's it for Connections today. Our thanks to Val LaBanca, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. Thanks to our interns this semester, Marielle Brinkerhoff and Kate Cowie-Haskell. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk to you on a Wednesday.